Our belief in ourselves has been shaken, generation after generation. We sit with Paul and are refreshed. There is no judge of us but the infinite. We are all knowledge, all goodness. If we keep to our faith in love, love keeps its faith in us. No sooner do we take this in than the state, dressed as piety, descends and tells us we are cursed with original sin, that there isn't enough, and we must work to provide for our loved ones. And beware, others want that sweet plum you have your eye on, and there just isn't enough for all. You must let me decide who gets a ticket to the sun, to the good stuff, and who doesn't. Truth is, no scarcity exists or ever did, only ignorance of the ways of the ins and outs and roundabouts of the infinite. Truth is, sin, as we define it, which is the state, its lies and falsehoods inculcated, obeisance that is coerced to an authority that's illegitimate, installed in us by the parent, who was taught to do so by the custom of rule, the imposition of force by damaged children statesmen in their belief it was the only way to achieve organization. Sin, by definition, can't be original. So when Paul says, "For every high priest taken from among men is ordained for men in things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins." When he says this, the gift we can now see is to help us get rid of the state. Quoting Paul, the longer quote that continues what I just quoted, Hebrews 5. "For every high priest taken from among men is ordained for men in things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins. Who can have compassion on the ignorant and on them that are out of the way? For that he himself also is compassed with infirmity. And by reason hereof, he ought, as for the people, so also for himself, to offer for sins. And no man taketh this honor unto himself, but he that is called of God, as was Aaron. So also Christ glorieth not himself to be made a high priest, but he that said unto him, Thou art my son, today have I begotten thee. As he saith also in another place, Thou art a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek, who in the days of his flesh," that is, and I'm interpreting here, when his attention was captured by the existing material world, "who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death, and was heard in that he feared, though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the author of eternal salvation unto all them that obey him. Called of God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek, of whom we have many things to say, and hard to be uttered, seeing ye are dull of hearing. For when for the time ye ought to be teachers, ye have need that one teach you again, which be the first principles of the oracles of God, and are become such as have need of milk, and not of strong meat. For every one that useth milk is unskillful in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But strong meat belongeth to him that are of full age, even those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil." And let me share a little background to the missionary work of Paul. I'm going to be quoting the King James Bible. And before we do, FYI to this FYI, let's not forget who we owe for the King James Bible. Quote, and I'm quoting an article in the New Yorker of October 30th, 2017 by Joan Acocella called "The Hammer, How Martin Luther Changed the World." Quote, "The crucial text in Martin Luther's Bible, the crucial text is Martin Luther's Bible, the New Testament, translated from the original Greek and published in 1523, followed by the Old Testament in 1534, translated from the Hebrew. Had Martin Luther not created Protestantism, this book would be the culminating achievement of his life. It was not the first German translation of the Bible. Indeed, it had 18 predecessors, but it was unquestionably the most beautiful, graced with the same combination of exaltation and simplicity, but more so as the King James Bible, which she makes sure we know. In parentheses, the author writes, William Tyndale, whose English version of the Bible for which he was executed was more or less the basis of the King James, knew and admired Luther's translation. My comment, we encounter it ever in the ways of the power besotted, how they rage against yet covet the gift of reflection that we get our true power from the infinite, from love. They study us, we who are led by love, like peculiar bugs, and then they murder us. Hats may be shifted, tossed, new ones placed aloft. Whatever keeps the people conned being the logic, but although it hides neath many guises, time's fullness come, they can't deny it. Plain talk, in truth's hour, power is power is power. Now, to that quote from the Bible, the martyrdom of St. Paul is placed by most authorities somewhere between AD 64 and 66. His first missionary journey, it says, was in 45 AD. Galatians was written in AD 57. Ephesians was written to the church at Ephesus about the year AD 63, unquote. It doesn't say when Hebrews was written, but its tone to me sounds much more world-weary than Romans, perhaps written from the vantage of having experienced a lot of persecution.